Hey there, Right Bites Club, and welcome to this month's interview.
So basically what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Sarah's freelance writing journey. And then she's going to share a little bit as well about kind of the healthcare medical copywriting niche, which is a niche that, as far as I'm aware, no one else kind of on the expert team has really any experience in that. So I thought we could kind of dive in a little there for anyone who's interested in pursuing that niche. I think if there's any time in history where this is probably a good time to be in, you know, it's probably a great time to be in that niche right now. And then we'll do some Q&A kind of towards the end of that. So kind of on that note, can you tell us a little bit about what got you into freelance writing, freelance copywriting, and kind of when that was on the timeline?
So
the origin story, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. So that was about going on like 7 years ago, and it happened gradually, because when I first started, I was so just terrified of it all that it took me a long time to really get to a place where I was actually comfortable. But that was all very much, I think, self-imposed stuff, just a lot of fear, things like that. But basically the reason I got into it was, Honestly, I was just telling someone this yesterday. It was like a series of just really like frustrating jobs. I was so sick of, like, I'm a hard worker, and, you know, I was sick of working for companies where it didn't matter how hard you worked. It was about the amount of time you put in at the company. That got old real quick for me. I just kind of wanted to have, and so when I was like, okay, I really want to, like, if I put the work in, I want to, like, you know, the results to, like, be passed on to me. Not some company. So I was like, okay, I guess I have to be my own boss. And then I actually had an event planning company, and I was also writing a little on the side, but I had an event planning company. I did that for 3 years, and that was what made me really, into the idea of location independence, because I was stuck. I actually was living in a place for a last year of my business, just finishing out like jobs. Because you plan events like a year out.
Yeah.
And so for that entire year, I was stuck in a place I didn't want to live, like doing a job I didn't want to do. And that was really hard, actually. So that made me kind of like, okay, start thinking about, you know, I love writing. I'm writing a little on the side. I was doing some like technical writing for like a restaurant, CFO, some like content writing, just like here and there, because it was just extra money or whatever. And then I really like got serious about copywriting after like a conversation with someone where they were telling me like what they had done in a year, and they were, you know, having a lot of success and stuff, and saying they were, you know, largely self-taught. And I've always liked writing. I come from a research background, so I was like in research before event planning. I was very much like doing a lot of lab work, writing reports, writing research materials, things like that. So I knew I was like writing. And then, yeah, copywriting, when somebody described it to me, it was like an awe, like this moment where I was like, that's it. Like, that's what I'm supposed to do. Cause it was like everything that I love, like psychology and some science and, you know, writing, obviously. But the thing that I had a little bit of resistance on was I always kind of thought marketing was slimy, and I had a really hard time with that, coming around to that. I was like, ugh, marketing is so gross. Especially like when one of the first pieces of advice to get really serious about it, somebody was like, oh, hand copy, like here's some old stuff to hand copy. And I was like, this is disgusting. Like, all of this is so slimy. I want nothing to do with it. But I, you know, obviously came across other examples and was like, okay. If I do it the way that like feels good with me, like I can make this work. So that kind of became like my process, is I just said no to things that really grossed me out. And pretty quickly I realized, like, for me to do that, I wasn't going to be able to work with an agency where they made me work right for just anyone. And so that was when I was like, okay, freelance is the way for me. So it just kind of became like this process, and it really took a lot of like the early stuff was getting over like my imposter syndrome, you know, learning to say no to the things that just like didn't fit right for me and what I wanted to do. Cause at the end of the day, like, making a lot of money wasn't really my goal. I just wanted to, like, travel all the time. I mean, like, I've been to over, like, 30 countries, and 20 of those I've lived for, like, a month or more. So, like, traveling is a big priority. Yeah. Having my time. So, yeah, like, the money thing was, like, kind of really, like, secondary or even, like, lower on the list. It was more about flexibility, being in charge, having, you know, my work, the results of my work, like, being passed on to me and not onto a company. And yeah, so then I just had to get serious about making my clients, like, people I genuinely wanted to work with. That was, like, the next phase, I would say. And that was cold emailing people that I, like, really wanted to work with, you know, going to conferences, like biohacking conferences, and being super fired up about some speaker, reaching out to them, until I was, like, working with clients, you know. Now some of my clients I've been working with for, like, 4 or 5, the longest one I think is, like, 5 years now, and she's, like, a friend. Crazy. You know, it's just such a pleasure to work with the clients I work with. And that's kind of, like, been my move. I mean, I've worked with some really big names as far as, like, doctors, and I've gotten to a place where I've just said no if they're jerks. Like, I've just been like, nope, we are not a good fit. At the end of the day, I really just want to love what I do every day. That's been my, like, big thing. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, but I think that's important. What I'm realizing is, like, that is what makes everything else come more easily, in my opinion, is when you, like, really love who you're working for. Because I've had clients where, like, I sat down to write for them and I didn't believe necessarily in, like, what they were selling. And it just, like, made my skin crawl, and I don't know. And I just couldn't do it. So that's kind of in a nutshell.
Totally. That's amazing. And when you were first getting started, when you kind of were making that transition from event planning into writing, what was your kind of lens to what freelance writing was? Was there, like, a certain type of writing that you kind of started out focusing on? Or did
I definitely started out in blogs, I think, because they're kind of, like, you know, and people, yeah. So I just think they're, you know, people need them on a recurring basis. I also was like, okay, I'm going to get a lot of practice. I also worked for a couple, like, content mills initially.
You remember TextBroker?
Huh?
You remember TextBroker? Were you familiar with that one? Okay. Uh-huh. That was the first one I ever came across. So
there's so many now. Like, oh my gosh. But I don't know. Same thing there. Like, they would make me keyword stuff till it just sounded like trash. And I was like, come on. Anyone with, like, a brain who reads this is going to be just, like, just not trust it. But, So
you wanted to do blogs. What was kind of, how did you discover that, hey, people out there are paying for blog writing? Like, kind of
Googling and researching and coming across different people who are saying, like, yeah, I'm doing this. Okay. You know, and a lot of people love to say, like, blogs are content and not copy, but, like, they definitely can be copy. And I think that was I went that route because it felt like the easiest way, like, foot in the door.
Totally.
And now I honestly mostly write emails now. And that's my, like, favorite. Emails, landing pages. I like, now that I'm comfortable, I like hard numbers to go along so I can get some, like, immediate feedback and stuff like that. But foot in the door, blogs were definitely what I started with.
Totally. And at what point did you kind of start to think in terms of, hey, medical is going to be my niche?
I kind of always, that's not true, because I did initially, like, write for anyone who would hire me, basically, like, graphic design, software companies, like, everything. But pretty quickly I had come across just, like, the idea of, like, having a niche. And I was like, well, the obvious answer for me is, like, health and wellness, because that's, like, what I, like, read in my, like, free time. Like, that's what I care about. That's what I like talking about. So it just was kind of, like, clear to me that that would be, like, a good way to go with that.
Totally.
Yeah. And honestly, it's such a big niche. I say niche. I could be another like so that is like such a big one that a lot of people think is like, I often get the question like, is it oversaturated? And I just think like the answer is like absolutely no. And the only like qualifications I had outside of like what I did to like kind of educate myself in the area was like, I did have a bachelor in biology, but that doesn't mean I can talk about biology with any, like I need to like read and research just as anyone else might need to like research and learn about that. So I really believe that like, if you have the interest in an area, like you can become like the expert in that over time, because our work just involves so much like learning. So I don't really think that like has actually helped me very much, other than when I was first starting out to kind of boost my own confidence, maybe. Nobody's asked what my degree is in, you know?
Totally. And when you were like identifying people that you wanted to work with, you know, mm-hmm. people that you felt like, hey, this is a perfect fit, as I'm sure it could vary from person to person, but in general, were these people who already had fairly large brands, or were these people that you felt like were like leading in their field or had kind of these other qualifications, and you sort of more reached out to them to try to be part of helping them build their brand? Or maybe a mixture of all the above.
Yeah. So starting out, I definitely, again, I think it was just major imposter syndrome, reached out for people who seemed like they needed more help. But the problem with that, as I feel like I'm sure you guys know, is like those people tend to not fully understand the importance of marketing and copywriting and what we do. And so I realized very quickly that I was spending a lot of my time explaining why we should do this, why this is important. And I had some clients it was really amazing to work with some of those clients if they like, you know, trusted the process after hearing like my explanations about why it's valuable. It was really fun to see some of those people grow like rapidly because of like the work I did. Yeah. But pretty quickly, I would say like, within like a year of like going after those like clients, I started just going after really big names, and I didn't think it was gonna work, and then it worked, and I was like, like it was actually really crazy to me, because I had a few people like reach out, like doctors that I was like, there's no way I'm ever gonna reach this person, and they would just like be like, yeah, when can you start? And I was like, oh shoot. So that's something that I actually encourage people to do, like go big. Like there's really like, what do you have to lose? The other thing is like most of our communication is through, I mean, for me anyway, is through emails and stuff like that. And it can feel scary, but it's not like being in person with an interview where you're going to get like face-to-face rejected. Like they don't know you, like you're just starting the conversation. If they like say no, it's really nothing to do with you. So I'm a big believer in just like going for the people at the top if you feel ready. And those people are actually sometimes easier to like get their contact information for, like, which also surprised the heck out of me. Like I was just like, oh, I'll never find this person's email. And it was like literally like firstname@company.com. And then they like responded. I was like, oh shoot. You're responding. So yeah.
Totally.
Go for the top. Don't go for the people. I mean, obviously I say that because most people tend to hold themselves back, you know? But obviously if you're like starting out, it is worth like building your skill set before you like go after, I don't know, Google or something.
Totally. But like you're saying, that it does seem like a lot of people who have success stories to share, like literally just named their clients, you know, like they picked who they wanted to work with and then reached out and, you know, and again, it's a little bit of a numbers game. Like it's not like, I'm sure not everyone you reached out to said yes.
Well, most people said no.
Yeah.
Most
people said no. You're not looking for everyone to say yes. You're looking for one person to say yes. Two people. Right. You know, that's, I love that.
Yeah, no, like for sure most people said no, but the handful of people that said yes that I was also like, when we both have a big yes, it feels really good, and it makes for, like, a joy.
And it's kind of exciting to be doing something where you don't need, you know, so many things in life, you need a 97 percentile for it to succeed.
Right.
What's kind of fun about pitching is you need, like, you just need to bat like 5% and you like knocked it out of the park. Yeah. You know? Like, so, like, where else in life can you have that little success and it be successful, you know?
Right. And something that has really like played out time and time again, I love the like little phrase or whatever, that rejection is actually redirection. Because everything that hasn't worked out for me that I've thought like, oh, this is it. And it like hasn't worked out for me has been the best thing, but I couldn't see it in the moment. You know, it just like opened up another door that I just didn't see at the time because I was too close to it. And yeah, there are so many opportunities for copywriters in the world. And I really like feel like every day more and more coming online, and it's just, yeah, no, I totally agree.
And when we talk about like the medical health and wellness space in particular, are there any things that you've noticed in that niche that feel unique to the niche, or, you know, for people who are thinking about getting into that, is there anything that you'd recommend? What one thing that I've found in my limited experience seems a little bit unique to that niche is that it feels like the pay rates can have, they vary incredibly wide. Like it feels they can go from one end of the spectrum of the other. Whereas like some niches, it seems like they trend higher, some trend lower. That one seems to be all over the place depending on, you know, the success of the brand. But I'm curious just kind of what you've seen in that space. Any thoughts you have on the niche?
On the pay? I just think because it's just so big that mm-hmm. that's probably why, like, there's so many like sub niches within like medical or health and wellness. There's just so many different sub varieties. Totally. So I don't know. So the areas that I have ended up in just out of like interest and clients I end up working with a lot of like keto brands, biohacking, gut health, and functional medicine, like doctors. Because those are the people, so functional medicine doctors, the other thing that's like, I think good to think about are like who within that world are actually like gonna benefit most from copywriters. And those are people who are not able to bring on patients through insurance. So there's a lot of doctors like that, physical therapists, chiropractors, there's so many dentists. Those are some of the people that come to mind like right now. And then like anyone who has a product, obviously. So e-commerce/health and wellness.
Totally.
Those would be the ones that definitely I would think would pay more. But then there are just always going to be those people who are, you know, trying to get on Upwork and pay a copywriter $10 to write them like a 10 email sequence. Like that just is always going to exist.
It's a universal reality for writers.
Yeah, for all the niches, there's always going to be that person on Upwork that makes $10. And I just feel like those are two different worlds. You know, there are people who are trying to make as much, like, I feel like those are the people not playing the long game.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to like look for clients who are I want to work with clients who want to play the long game. If they are trying to get like the cheapest work as possible to grow their e-commerce store as quickly as they can, and they don't care about their consumer and providing value, like we're not a good fit, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's actually in every niche. That's not just health and wellness. So I don't even know if I answered your question. No,
you definitely did. Some of the sub niches you mentioned, like one thing I was thinking about is you named a lot of things where the problem those sub niches solve is a very widespread and urgent problem, you know, like
mm-hmm. and complex. Yeah. Usually it's not something that's like, here, take this one pill and you'll be fine.
Exactly.
So they need people to like explain and help and guide. And that's where copywriters can like bring a lot of value.
It's an ongoing client customer relationship type thing. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I guess one other question before we go to Q&A. Since you started in the same niche.
No, it's okay.
I don't know why I pronounce
people
it.
People always tell me it's niche, and I'm like, I've been saying niche too long. We're not changing now.
Niche is correct. I just suddenly realized I've gone for like 8 years saying it wrong.
Well, I've had people tell me I'm saying it wrong, so who knows? Maybe none of us know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got it wrong. But given that you've been in that same area.
Yeah, let's avoid the word altogether in true copywriter style.
Totally. Did you kind of just gradually increase your rates over time? Did you have kind of an initial period where you realized, hey, it's time for me to raise my rates? Mm-hmm. Is there kind of, how did increasing your pricing look through your journey?
Yeah, so I increased my pricing gradually. And what I did was, because initially I needed to make money. So I put my, you know, my pricing probably like at a very affordable rate, but it still was better, I feel like, than like a lot of people who start out and they're so scared to charge well. So I started at a lower rate, and basically like once I would fill my client load, when I got to a point where I was like, I can't take on any more clients, I actually would hire another copywriter or somebody who was trying to like learn copywriting and pass off some of my lower like paying clients to them, mentor them a little bit, and then and pay them well. Like I was always like making sure I paid them really well. And then eventually I would go back to those clients and say, all right, I'm raising my rates, you know, and most of the time people would stay with me, but they would maybe reduce the amount of quantity of work.
Yeah.
Or they would just say like, no, thanks, sorry. But I would always, and then I would pass them off and be like, hey, this is a person I've been working with, blah, 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 and pass them off to that person. And then also as I gained kind of confidence in cold emailing and client outreach, I kind of got to the point where I felt like once I saw it like in action, which I think takes time because people can tell you, oh, cold emailing works. But until you like really experience that and believe it like truly yourself, it can be, I don't know, kind of scary. But I got to a point where I was like, okay, I know I can reach out to clients and bring some on. And so I just kind of like would fill in with a higher paying client, offload a lower paying client, and just kind of like cycle through until I was at a place where, and that's the other thing is like, I don't try to just like see what I can get out of a client. In fact, I've had like students of mine say like, oh, I charge more than you. I'm like, good for you. Like, I that's great. I am like at a place where I'm doing what I want to do. I'm making what I'm going to make. My clients feel like they're getting a lot of value out of it. Cause I really want my clients to feel like, whoa, like this was worth it. Yeah. So that's kind of like the process. And it was obviously like kind of messy. It wasn't as smooth as I just made it sound. There were definitely times where I was like, crap, a deadline's coming up. Who's going to write it? Like, so it was a process.
But you kind of went through the process of using new demand to replace the old.
Yes. Yeah.
And on that note, how did you keep up demand? Was it mostly through cold outreach? Was there at any point something you did to try to kind of bring some level of inbound leads, or kind of what did that look like?
I mean, that happened because I incorporated SEO into my website. So that happened. You know, people came in through my website, people came in through LinkedIn. But really my focus was on cold emailing again, just kind of because I really wanted to pick who I worked with. And I'm pretty sure every client I have right now, actually two of them are word of mouth, like somebody like referred them, but most of them are still like cold email from like years ago. Yeah. So I'm like a big believer in cold email. When people tell me cold email doesn't work, I'm like, you're doing it wrong. Cause it does work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. That pretty much covers everything I wanted to get through. Now we'll open it up for questions. If whoever wants to chime in first, go for it. And then if you have a question, go ahead. Did you want to say something, Sarah?
Well, I see Sharon said cold emailing didn't work for her. And so I would love to like chat about that, because the thing about cold emailing is to do it right, you can't send out a template. You have to like get to, you have to know them. And that's why like, I mean, when you go at it, not just trying to get like a wide variety of clients, you're going to do that post on LinkedIn and do things like that. If you just want like quantity, but if you want like quality and go in after, and you're going after like a particular individual, you know, one thing that really helps is I always like touched on something they recently did. Like I would say, hey, you know, how was XYZ conference? You spoke at it on this subject. I have loved your YouTube videos on this, blah, 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 blah. Like, did you have anything new to add? Can we expect like, you know, so I really like went and made sure that they were personal, but also like all these people I'm cold emailing for the most part are people that I like really do feel that way about, you know? So it's like genuine, personal. And I took like the time to do it. When I was first starting cold emailing though, I did do like a more templatey thing, but I always made sure that first paragraph was personalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good to know. What's interesting about that strategy is that's kind of what I use when I'm getting interviewees for articles, is that I will go and I'll check them out, and then I'll have some, you know, because I want to know a little bit about them so that I can customize that approach. But in terms of getting freelance work in, I think I'm a very prolific writer, and therefore I have so much work out there that it really works for me. So I've always found the cold email, it's not that I've never done it and it's never worked. It's my hit rate is much better with inbound marketing. People find my work and say, I want something like that. And they approach me. And that has been working for me for at least the last 10 years. Whereas emailing, you know, I keep it there in the back of my toolbox, but it's not something I take out very often.
And that's the thing is, that's what I say. Like, it's important to have like that toolbox, right? I, you know, cold emailed when I really wanted to build up a client base that I loved. And then I kind of, you know, put it away because my client load was great for years, but then I would bring it out when I would like come across a particular person. Like I would be like, wow, I really want to be a part of that company. And I love what they're doing. And I would cold email them. And so I would send like a one-off cold email here and there. And that also worked really well.
So I have a question related to that. And that you just said you put the strategy away and then you take it back out. So don't you market constantly even when your client load is full? I'm just interested in your approach. Because for me, doing stuff all the time, and then if people come to me and I'm busy, I say I'm busy, and then I book them in for later, or I put them on to somebody else. So I have that going all year round. So I'm interested to hear how your approach differs.
That would be ideal. I actually like have been given the hard time before many, many times by like just the idea that I don't do that for my copywriting business. But I just, I don't know. Like I'm again, creating my days to be like what I want them to be. Like I'm not going to sit down and write a blog about copywriting in the medical industry if I have leads coming in. I don't know. That's just me not wanting to do that. I'm like writing so much too that it's like it's, you know, yeah, so that's just me being
and just for those who don't know as well, Sarah also kind of has another part of her business where she trains other copywriters with a paid course. I would imagine at this point you don't even really want like a fully scheduled, you know,
client. I don't have a full client load right now. Yeah. And like I'm not working on copywriting for my clients 40 hours a week. I also have a small agency and I have an online course. So I split my time pretty evenly between those, and it's leaning a little bit closer towards the students in my course now. And I really just have kept a, you know, few clients that I really like love working with.
That sounds ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, it does feel like, you know, obviously this is true for several of us here on the call, but it's also true where I feel like once most people kind of hit their initial, you know, freelancing goals, kind of setting up some level of recurring income, some sort of side business is a goal of theirs. And if there's anything you wanted to share on that end of kind of when you kind of felt like, hey, this is worth adding and you know, kind of how that works for you.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know the reasons behind why people want to create courses. Obviously, it's definitely like touted as being a source of passive income, which it is not for me. Like, I put so
definitely not passive.
It's not passive. Like, I don't know. When people say it to me, I'm like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. But
recurring is a much better word.
Yeah, recurring is good. That is a much better word. But for me, that was, again, I think it's because I kind of go about things just like as they feel right for me. I hate to sound like such a little hippie in the world of copywriters who are all like numbers, but it's true. because I really like started that course because I had two people reach out. I had a bunch of people reach out and ask me like, how'd you get there? What'd you do? And I would like send them these emails. And then I had two women take it very seriously. And they quit their job in 3 months. And so I was like, wow, I should put this in a course. And that's really like how it happened. It was not like, but I do think it's important to, I don't know. I just think like, because I think everybody's different, especially now working with my students, everybody has such different goals.
Yeah.
To do is to just really get super, super clear on that. Visit it every day. You know how my makeup. And, you know, revisit your goals every day and work backwards. If that includes like some sort of information product or group coaching, or I had a student who recently did an SEO class for like local businesses. Then that is definitely a good idea to add something, but I can't say that I went after it for like that reason or, you know.
For sure. I saw someone tweeted this the other day where they were saying that a lot of people just copy other people's goals because they're kind of too lazy or unself-aware to figure out what their own goals are. I feel like that's so true, where like the people I know who are happy often don't have the same goals that most everyone else does. They just really understand what their goals are and are taking the steps to achieve those. Regardless of right. what area in their life it focuses on. And a lot of times it's not even just maximizing revenue, which is what I feel like right. a lot of people.
Some people go after it, but that's not really like what they want. That's actually like the first two lessons in my course is like pointing out that like sometimes we have goals, but if they're not based in like our values, like our core values, we're not gonna really go after them, right? So like, what are your core values? Is it to have more time? Is it to be with your family? Is it to have X number of dollars in the bank so you're not worried? And also I think a lot of people are like scared to say their goals out, like their values in that way, like out loud. So I think that's also really important to like think about and look at, but yeah, I don't know. That's like a whole nother like topic of figuring out what your like true values are. I talk a little bit about how like, you know, when you get triggered or when you are jealous or somebody says something that makes you angry, how those can be like clues as to like what your values are. Like if somebody's entrepreneur who I follow, she had posted like about taking her sister on an international vacation, and I was just like angry when I saw it, because I was like, how dare you like brag about something like that? And then I was like, you know what, it's because like I would love to do that for my family. You know what I mean? And so that ended up, I ended up like twisting that into being like a goal of mine. I'm going to take my older sister, who definitely like, you know, this is not something she would be able to do, on a vacation, you know? And so I just feel like that's so, it's so important. And there are a lot of books that like help with that. Like the, what's it called? Value something. And maybe I'll have to look and like put it back. But there, yeah, I think it's so important to get clear on your values, or you just kind of like can end up going after like a full client load and be like, why am I working so much? Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's good. Matt, did you have some questions? We'll go to you. And then as Sarah's answering Matt's questions, if you have any, throw them in the chat and we'll just kind of go down the list. We'll probably have you repeat it on the camera, but we'll just kind of to cue.
Hey Sarah, thanks for joining us today and sharing. Yeah. So to me, it was really interesting to hear that you wrote for the healthcare space, because I worked in like hospitals and with doctors and specialists for like over 10 years. And I never saw anybody hire a copywriter or a marketer. And I'm just like, what? And I was just, so I'm like, I'm kind of curious about how this process works, because I'm wondering, are you talking with like office managers, or are you talking with the doctors themselves? Are they hiring you directly? And it makes sense that you're kind of working with people that have a product or a course, or they're not in the traditional sort of insurance world, because every doctor I work with, all their patients just came to them through other doctors.
Yeah, and other doctors. Yeah, so again, if you want to write for doctors specifically, going like focusing on ones who don't like typically get their patients through insurance is like obviously the easiest way to do it. And there's a lot though. There's a ton. The other thing is because all those people kind of have to do their own marketing. Like some dentists are incredible marketers. It's like very impressive because they've had to learn over time how to do that. And it's valued and it's important in their industry because not everybody has dental insurance. So for me, with doctors, I've worked for dentists. I've worked for like airway specialists. I've worked for physical therapists. I've worked with chiropractors. I've worked with, I'm sure I'm missing something, but like a lot of functional medicine doctors I also really like, because they're usually dealing with like chronic illness and stuff like that. Complicated things are enjoyable for me. So usually I'm talking with either like the doctor initially. So when I cold email, I always go to the top. So it always like goes straight to the doctor. And then sometimes I'm working with, if they have like a team or a business manager or an office manager, sometimes we're working together, but usually it's actually directly with the doctor themselves.
So are you looking for people that you can kind of tell that they're like a doctor entrepreneur, where they're the business owner and
sometimes,
kind of the decisions?
People with books, doctors who like to do speaking engagements, doctors with products or courses, those are big ones.
It's just interesting to me because every doctor I've ever worked with
could
not stay far enough away from this whole thing as possible. Like if you even said like, hey, maybe like we could get patients by emailing them, like no, like HR or whoever, they deal with all that stuff. Like they're locked into like a hospital system, or they're locked into a group system where their only job is to do practice medicine.
I like often joke, especially after like going through this process with my students who all have different niches, doctors are like generally like terrible marketers and like honestly business owners. Sorry to like any doctor who might hear this, but, and that's something that has kind of like amazed me. And I've had this conversation actually with clients of mine where they're like, we just didn't know that was going to be part of our job, that we would need to learn how to run a practice and a business. Like it was a rude awakening to leave medical school. And obviously the exception is if you're in a hospital where that's all like taken care of. But any doctor who has their own practice, like most of them are just figuring out. Other people who are really bad at marketing are lawyers.
Interesting. Cool. That's well, thank you. Thank you for sharing, Sarah. That was really insightful.
Yeah, no problem. There's a few questions that are quick that are, have you worked with any dietitians? One who was kind of a dietitian, yes. And then, but most of the doctors I work with talk a lot about diet. And then have I ever done any, or neuroscience? Yes, I've done a product with neuroscience and then a doctor who was a neuroscientist.
And one thing just to mention before we get to Jeff's question, I don't know if you guys have ever talked with someone who used to have a really successful lead gen system, but something happened to it and they're now trying to build a marketing system, whereas before it was just given to them sort of. You'll understand exactly what she's talking about with these doctors who are coming out of the hospital system. Cause it's like when you're in the mentality of you're just focused on fulfillment and someone else is doing the lead gen and sales, you don't realize how much goes into it. And those are like,
some of the worst clients I've ever had are people who like just lucked into like an SEO term that fueled their business for like 5 years. And then all of a sudden their rankings disappeared and they think that it's going to be as easy the second time around as it was the first time around. And so that's kind of, you kind of have basically if the doctors are in that position where either they, you know, have their lead gen fulfilled or are coming off of having it fulfilled, sometimes maybe not the best fit, but then there's all these other doctors who are like right in the midst of marketing is so hard. How do I do this? And no one is sending them their leads. And I would imagine that is where the opportunity is.
I was building a like course with a client of mine, a doctor, and we were getting ready to build it on all the things he's an expert in. And I was like, wait, we should really survey, because he has like an email list of practitioners. We should really survey them and ask what they want to learn from you. And it came back like everyone wanted to know about running a business and marketing. And we were just like, oh my gosh, we almost built an entire like course around like chronic illness. And all these doctors want to know is like, how are you thriving as a practice? And yeah, and so we're really glad we did that because we completely like changed directions. It's crazy.
That's amazing.
I actually have a follow-up question kind of related to that, Sarah, if possible.
Mm-hmm.
Have let's, you ever like oh,
let's
sorry.
Let's jump to Jeff's question real quick.
Oh, sorry.
We'll hit yours after.
So I don't know how much more I can contribute because a lot of the general ideas have captured some of the thoughts in my mind, but
okay.
You know, Sarah, you come from a bio background. I have a biomedical background. I haven't really flexed it as much as perhaps I could have and should have. So I'm just curious, like, what are the biggest opportunities that you think right now in the medical field? And how do you kind of approach it? You know, how do you pitch it? And how do you close those deals with potential doctors who obviously see as, you know, marketing is important, but they don't know if it's vital for their survival as a practice.
Right. Well, what are your goals though? Are your goals like big, like high paying clients? Are your goals not, you know, to write about a person? Like, do you have a particular subject in mind that's just like really enjoyable for you to write about?
So normally I work with B2B and SaaS companies. And then there's the umbrella term of human-centric brands. Cause anyone who works to benefit humanity, they're worth working for.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be completely honest. During this conversation, I purchased the domain biomedicalcopywriting.com. So
I love that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yo, full disclaimer, it's no longer available. So anyone else, I'm sorry. You can buy it from me for a couple thousand. That's all cool. But
as long as it's fully loaded with content already, I'll take you up on that.
Give me 2 months at least.
Okay? So, all right, I'll call you.
I love that so much.
It's been on my mind for so long. I feel like I haven't exploited my undergrad degree, and I've never really like valued my undergrad degree. You know, I've been. I think, as you've said, Sarah, you've been the independent traveler. You've had that freedom. You've probably traveled the world, and I've been there. I've been in Asia for 6 years. So I'm just curious on a front of like. This medical community where copywriting is essential. And I've worked with some psychologists, I worked with some wellness coaches, and I understand what their needs are. But from your experience and expertise, like, what do you think is the driving force to get into this kind of niche or niche? I think I commented, I don't know whether how to pronounce it, but what's the best way to get in as quick as possible?
Well, first of all, if you write like, you know, in B2B and SaaS, like you're gonna be coming to people, not everyone, but a lot of people in the medical world with way more just experience. And I don't know, people in the SaaS world are so much more hardcore, I feel like, when it comes to like copywriting stuff. And so you will be bringing a ton of value with your experience in SaaS, I think. So I think more from what you're telling me, I really think that you probably just need to like go for it. I don't think that there's anything like special that I could tell you. I will say that like my undergrad degree, like it really, I don't think that it has helped me that much. I mean, except, I mean, when I go to read a study to include it in my copy, I still have to look up medical terms. Like, I don't know, I don't have it all memorized in my mind. Like, it's not, I don't know. I just don't think that it's really helped me as much as like actually studying copywriting and marketing has. But yeah, so as far as like who would be the people to go after, again, outside of kind of what I've already said, as far as like doctors, it's not even just doctors, it's people in like, there are a lot of e-commerce brands and people with products, especially in like the biohacking world, you know, they have really expensive products, you know, that are, you know, a couple hundred dollars. They're talking to a very like particular group of people who are very well educated. All those people would be great for someone like you as far as like needing copywriting. And yeah, the health and wellness like e-commerce scene, I feel like is really upping its game lately. They're really starting, people are really in it for like the long haul. People are trying to build, are building like supplement lines and products that they want like long-term, loyal, loving clients. I feel like that's like just like infinite as far as like how many exist and how many are trying to get started. And that can be like supplements are a big one. Mushrooms are a big one. That's like one that comes to mind. I'm trying to think of anything else. And then the random like biohacking products for sure. Things like, you know, are you familiar with like biohacking stuff or?
A little bit. I'm getting too familiar with CBD because that's a huge crave.
Oh, CBD, in Canada, that's huge. Yeah, CBD, all that stuff.
I've worked with a few CBD companies.
There's a guy who lives next door to me. He's like a serious, like serial entrepreneur. And we both got puppies at the same time. So we just like let our puppies play and talk about business. And he's like talking to me about like cricket protein and how that's like the new thing and vegans are going to be all about it. Not animal.
Cricket protein.
I've got all this like cricket protein now that I'm scared to eat. And I'm like, you need a copywriter to help people overcome wanting to actually eat crickets because I don't want to eat them, even though I'm like not. So there's so much in the health and wellness space. Like I just heard about cricket protein for the first time like a week ago. And it makes sense to me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think Rashid, you had a question as well, right?
Yes, I had a question. Can you hear me well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Sometimes my headphones don't work. Yeah. So yeah, Sarah, thanks for a lot of insights. I definitely learned a lot today, even though like I have nothing to do with medical field. But I guess I had like main question, but before that, I wanted to clarify real quick. I'm a little confused. So like when you said you were acquiring leads within like doctors and like private practitioners, was it like, were they primarily looking to boost their like local SEO with the content and mm-hmm. with everything?
Some, yeah. They all had different goals. Some, and they all have different goals. Some, okay, so I'll just talk about a few different ones. One was, had a book and loved to do speaking engagements. So that was his goal. He no longer really ran a practice. Another one, her goal was that she wanted a waiting list. She was had a practice. It wasn't full. She wanted a waiting list and like within a year. So we did like lots of local stuff, local SEO and things like that. And telemedicine. She like incorporated that into her practice as well. Now she has like a multiple year, like a 5-year waiting list or something. So it really just depends. That's what I'm saying. It's so big, like the health, wellness, medical like niche. It really like should be like broken down into sub niches because it's so massive.
Okay, all right, well thanks for clarifying that. And I guess that's the main question is about me in particular. So I'm coming from software world, so like technical mm-hmm. communicator and software engineer. So I guess I'm trying to make it into, for some reason, I gravitate towards SaaS. And I was thinking if you can translate your experience and your background and see if you can recommend some like specific way for, because I'm thinking longer term, for some specific way for like you know, good acquisition channels or ways to like kind of set the foot in the door of SaaS and like how to approach it in general. Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, since you mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like I can't speak with it as much like expertise or even just experience rather. I mean, I would go about it the same way that I went about it with health and wellness. I would just find companies that I think are doing a wonderful job. I wouldn't go for the SaaS would definitely be one that I would go straight for the top with. I wouldn't want to like mess around with people who are just getting started as a SaaS company. I have a feeling they're probably, you know, not budgeting well for copywriters. That's just a guess though. But the thing about SaaS, cause I have a friend who's a copywriter in the SaaS niche. They really understand the value of copywriting more so than I think the health and wellness industry. So that's something that you really have going for you. I think probably it would just be about like not going for the little guys, but going for some of the big ones. That would be my recommendation.
And I would, to piggyback on that, everything that Sarah said about just directly emailing the people with like specific pitches connected to what they're doing and have been doing recently is going to apply in SaaS. And then, you know, maybe you don't go for the top two in the space, but you, you know, 3 through 10 have all invested a lot of money and are really trying to get more market share. And, you know, by virtue of the fact that they're 3 through 10, they're not fully succeeding in their goal. You know, I don't know many SaaS founders who are trying to be 10, you know, although I guess in some spaces that can support hundreds, but you know what I'm saying? Like find the people who are like within striking distance, but aren't like the top of the top. And they need more help. You know, they're looking for ways to close the distance. And so if you pitch them directly, that can definitely be effective in SaaS.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah. Thank you so much, guys.
Also, I feel like something that's really helped me with finding clients is like once I find somebody who's really good, I try and figure out who's like in their direct like web. So. And I would guess that SaaS is pretty similar. Like, I don't know, just like one that comes to mind is like this particular cart that I just, you know, signed up for, you know, as a product, a SaaS product. There are like all of their competitors. So like, I don't know. It's just like, if you can find like one person who is really, seems like an ideal client to you, like see who's like in their direct circle or their direct competition. Cause it's been a really easy way for me to find other people who are good fits. I don't know.
And then, Ame had a question as well.
Yes. I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about your experience working with dietitians. Cause I'm trying to kind of target that group. More specifically with like video scripts, which that has been a struggle in itself, but I feel like there's a lot of resistance from dietitians at the moment to being online in general. And I was wondering if you had the same experience or if like maybe, I don't know, you had any recommendation on how to better pitch this group?
Can I ask you a quick question? Why dietitians?
Because I am an aspiring dietitian as well, and I feel like there's so much like rubbish nutrition information online that there kind of needs to be a more authoritative voice on nutrition.
Yes. Okay.
But well, dietitians totally are not very good at being friendly either. They're like what is omega-3? And nobody wants to read about omega-3 except other dietitians.
Well, some people do. Biohacking world does. Keto world does.
Biohacking, yes, but the average person doesn't.
I would say though that people like in the keto world, people who are struggling with their health definitely want to read about omega-3s.
I want to read about it in like, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, was going to say, I think they do want to read about it. I think the issue is when dietitians present information, it's like, let's talk about omega-3 instead of like fish and nuts. Are these in your diet?
Right. No, for sure. Like doctors are really bad at writing as well.
Yeah.
They like write something like, can't you just like use this? And I'm like, oh, nobody wants to read that. Yeah. So I guess the thing that popped into my head and why I asked about dietitians is there's so many other like people that you like need to talk a lot about diet. Like for example, functional medicine, mm-hmm. naturopathic doctors, they talk like that's one of the main things they're talking about, and they're not necessarily a dietitian. So even if that's like something mm-hmm. that you really love writing about, talking about, and honestly, writing for functional medicine doctors, one of the main motivators for me was also what you said about there being just so much like crap information online. It was a huge motivator for me to want to write for them, to kind of be one of the people trying to put like quality information out into the world. But I only worked with one dietitian, and I'll be like, candidly, she was kind of difficult to work with as far as like, it was, I think she wasn't having as much like, I don't know. She was kind of difficult to work with. And obviously one person isn't enough of like a sample size to like say all dietitians mm-hmm. are like that, but that was my experience. Yeah. So I guess that's all I can really add to that. You know, but there are so many other people who are talking about diet besides dietitians, and they just might be another one of those niches that aren't really, I don't know. It reminds me of therapists. Therapists is another niche where like, they just don't really, they're so hard to get on board when it comes to marketing. And I don't know that I fully understand mm-hmm. like why.
Yeah, I'm finding that a lot as well. Like there seems to be like a certain style within dietetics that everyone has adopted, but it's mostly for other dietitians rather than for the people they're actually trying to serve. And I don't really know how to like, or I guess at what point should I kind of give up on my quest and then just move on to like a different group?
But it could just be a pivot. Like there's other people like having similar conversations, I think, besides people who call themselves dietitians. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And also like something to keep in mind that is really interesting and I've been like really fascinated by is a lot of people in the health and wellness / medical space, people like therapists, I don't know specifically about dietitians, but maybe are actually finding that because of like the restrictions with their licensing, they're letting, a lot of them are mm-hmm. starting to like let them lapse and then switching to kind of be more of like online coaches or calling themselves coaches because they have a lot more freedom in what they can say and what they can do. And I don't know if that is the case with dietitians, but it just kind of came to my mind. I don't like sometimes doctors and you know people like that are worried about marketing because of what they can and cannot say, and some of them are not willing to take the time to educate themselves to figure out like what it is they can and cannot say. It's just scary to them. It can hurt their licensing. I mean, one of my like dear friends is a therapist, and she's like just setting herself up to let her license lapse so that she can like, she's like, then I can like actually help people because I'm not so terrified of what I can and cannot say all the time. And I just, I don't know, I find that so interesting. And I think that's gonna like, I don't know. I feel like that's gonna keep happening. And I'm really interested to see like how it all plays out. Crickets are
as well.
Sorry, I feel like I don't know. I don't want to say something that I don't like know enough about. But yeah, those are just some of my thoughts.
Oh, no. Yeah, thank you. This has been very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Rashid is very passionate about this cricket protein.
Their protein doesn't have a complete amino acid profile. Worthless. Are you sure? I'm going to get you a packet of it. That was like actually posted on the packet. It's like a complete amino acid profile.
Oh, really? Wow.
Rashid, I'm going to send you some cricket protein.
All right. I'll be waiting for that proof.
I mean, I don't know. I just found out about it. I don't know.
She's like, if I don't gain 30 pounds of muscle in the next 6 months, then it doesn't count. Matt, did you want to ask that follow-up question now?
I did. Sorry for butting in earlier, guys. I just got excited.
I come from a family of interrupters. It's like really hard for me.
Hey, bad habit. I'm an interrupter too.
Me too. It's cool.
So my question was, like, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you've pitched someone, the doctor, or healthcare provider, they're interested in working with you, and then you get in and you realize, like, that their marketing system is broken and copy isn't going to be the thing that actually helps them?
Oh, yeah.
So what do you do in that situation?
I just say, you know, like, one thing, like, okay, yes, that happens. It's happened to me, like, a lot, I feel like. I just tell them. I will say, when I was first starting out and I didn't have, like, the courage to tell them, I kind of, like, built up that relationship. I would help them, like, where I could help them, maybe with, like, their website copy, things like that, putting them in touch with, like, a developer, saying, I really recommend that you kind of, like, consider having somebody look over your website, telling you, giving you an audit, something like that. From what I see, like, here's what I see, and, like, I'm not a developer. Here's somebody I work with regularly. He's amazing. And then, like, I really try to, like, build that relationship before I'm like, hey, your whole system is, like, trash. They're probably not going to be open to it. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of tell them, I try to help them where I can. I also, you know, try and put them in touch with helpful people. And then as our relationship grows, I, you know, give them more and more advice. I have, though, also had the situation where I was like, oh, this is like a dumpster fire, like abort.
Like, got it.
Yeah. And some people I've, like, gotten, one client just, like, came to mind, or a potential client, because we didn't end up working together, I was like, look, I could sell you my copywriting services, or, you know, tell you what I could do for your copywriting, but that's not really going to help you. Here's what you need to do. Here are my best recommendations. And honestly, you bringing me on board is not going to fix all of these things. And this is where I recommend you start. And actually, that person reached out to me, like, a year later, and was like, I finally finished, like, fixing some things, and was, are you, like, ready to, like, do other stuff?
Nice. Cool. So, well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
It's funny how similar some of our experiences on that end have been, because, like, I've had that same conversation so many times with clients, and I also resonated with something you mentioned earlier about, like, sometimes you just don't want to keep increasing your rates. Like, I got to a certain point where I was like, most of the clients that I'm working with, like, with my lead flow, I could probably push my prices up, but if I was that business, I don't think it'd be a priority to pay more on their website than what I'm charging mm-hmm. them now. And so why would I want to, like, charge them up to a price where I wouldn't even really be making that decision if I was the business owner? And I think that's a perfectly viable way to approach pricing as well. You know, it doesn't always have to be about how much can we get.
Well, I think we have maybe similar experiences on, like, when I was like, okay, it's easy to get in the track of mind where you're like, grow. And I started to, like, build a, like, full-on agency. And I was like, wow, I do not like this. And it is not worth, you know, it just wasn't worth it. I was like, I can't even imagine, like, what, like, I just so didn't enjoy it, because I don't like project management. I like actually writing. And so I was like, I don't even know, like, what I would charge to make this worth it. And then I was like, okay. And I had to, like, backpedal and be like,
yeah,
let's, like, I actually, what the way I did it is I ended up just pairing, like, the clients with some of the writers and being like, okay, you guys are, like, friends now. I'm gonna pull out. I was like, I can't, I'm not interested in this.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Well, awesome. I think that pretty much that wraps up our time here. Thanks so much for hopping on. This was super fun.
Yeah. I'm super excited about this group. It's nice to, you know, talk about copywriting and all, you know, different levels and stuff.
Wait, so are you joining us in Slack then?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to admit I'm not very good at checking Slack. I also, my YouTube guys are on Slack, and they're always like, wow, it's been 2 weeks. So I'll try. Maybe now that both of you guys are there, I'll open it more.
There you go. Occasionally, maybe you'll get a notification that will draw you into the portal.
Well, I left the email notifications on, and that's helpful.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
I don't think I'm going to turn those off. So.
Hey, Jacob.
Yeah.
I know we're over time, but I had a question that I wanted to get a quick answer on if I could squeeze one in.
Yeah, if you have a few extra minutes, Sarah.
We're good.
Sarah, I just wanted to know, when you're working with a particular client that's in a field that's where there's competition, you said you would talk to those people around them. But do they have any issues with competition where they just, or where there's, is there like an unspoken rule, in these fields that if you're working for one, you don't work in with another one that's close to them?
Actually,
in that same space,
most people, like web developers, Facebook ads people, email guys, all these official terms, most of them like work with similar people. And I think that, like, I know it's a concern, especially if you're dealing with SEO. People are like, well, what if you compete with like your two clients or whatever are competing? But I've always been able to figure out how to do it so that they're not like competing with each other. I think probably part of that is because usually there is a slight difference in focus. So I'm sure what you're saying can happen. It hasn't happened to me. And obviously if I had two clients that were like exactly the same and in direct competition with each other, I probably like wouldn't do that. But usually there's enough of a difference that we can like work on it. And honestly, that's another thing, like doing SEO with people that are so similar. One of the ways I've really been able to help a lot of my clients is I notice gaps in content. So as you like are really familiarizing yourself with a particular subject, you start to notice like, oh, people are talking about it from this angle, but nobody's approaching it from this angle. And then I'll like go to like, you know, clients and be like, hey, let's approach it from like these two directions. So I actually think it helps in my experience.
Hey, Right Bites Club, thanks for joining us for this interview. We'll catch you next month with another interview from another talented writer. Take care.